Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Hey everybody, welcome to the FASD Success Show, episode number 45. I'm your host, Jeff Noble. I am so thankful you are here. Where is here? You are listening to the podcast that is creating FASD success. Not only FASD success in caregivers, frontline workers, individuals, basically anybody who is in the trenches day after day dealing with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. I hope you are well. At the time of recording, this is just after the Thanksgiving holiday in the United States. I don't know if you know, because we have people from all over the world that listen to this, but the difference, there's about a month between the Canadian and American Thanksgiving. So the Canadian Thanksgiving is like early to middle October. And of course, this is late November when we were recording this. And I have this discussion with my parents in our group, in our Caregiver Kickstart coaching program, that I don't understand why you would have a holiday so close. Why would you have Thanksgiving and Christmas so close together that there's no buffer from family? There's no buffer from the chaos of that is the holidays, especially with individuals on the spectrum and the families. So that's always been weird to me. I say, America, you should petition it to have it when we have it. You need that buffer. You need that time to calm down from dealing with in-laws and family and, your increased work when it comes to getting everything prepared and trying to set yourself up for this magical family moment, only for it to crash often. And frankly, another silver lining, if we could say that, about the pandemic is, I know different states and provinces and countries have different rules, but it's going to look different. The holidays in general are looking different. And for oftentimes, that could be better. Less stress on you. You don't have to worry about so many things going right. You don't have to worry about your kids behaving in front of family members. None of that. And so new traditions can start. And I know it could be tough to see it that way because in actuality, this is a loss. We talk about grief and loss, and we will a little bit today too, but a lot of other cool things, because we got a really awesome guest with some just genuine wisdom, and being on both sides of the table, being a teacher and being a parent to individuals on the spectrum. So it was really enlightening, and I really had a good time talking to Jay Durting. Back to the holidays. It's going to be different this year. So what kind of traditions are you doing? What are you changing up? Bringing it back to loss, like it's a loss of tradition. I heard that from Dr. Dorothy Badry, especially what we're dealing with right now. It is the loss of these traditions. And usually when we're going through a tough time, we rely on these traditions to get us through tough times, which has been 2020. So it's important to recognize that loss. And I certainly am. But I'm also looking at the resilience and what does this actually mean and what can you do? You could change traditions, make new traditions. It's just about surviving. So I hope you, everybody survived and was safe so we can get back to our new normal as soon as possible. So we start seeing each other. I even put it in our free group, facebook.com/group/FASD forever. There's about 6,000 folks in there. So if you're not in there yet, you could head over to that link and join up if you're a parent. And I'm like, when this is all over, because I have to think ahead. I have to think of the future. I have to have something to look forward. And I wrote a post that I am throwing the biggest caregiver conference that the world has seen, the biggest FASD caregiver conference. We are going to make it happen because we will have to celebrate and hug and tell war stories. So just know that is percolating. And as soon as we get the go, and we don't know when that is, nobody does, but just know it's happening and it's going to be awesome. So if you need something to look forward to, save your pennies. And depending on where you live in the world, renew that passport. come to Canada, because we're going to hang out and it's going to be excellent. And speaking of excellent, today's guests, I'll tell you how this percolated. This is like possibly the first podcast listener that wrote me, and now he's a guest, because I reached out, and I'm reaching out to you as well. If you got something to say, or you have a great story, you're doing something in the FASD field, write me at jeff@fasdforever.com. I can't have everybody on the show, but I would love to know. And, you know, if it works out, we can have you on the show. And I got this email, I guess all the way in September, early September. And in one of my podcasts, I talked about stats. And one of the stats are 98% of females is the ratio to 2% men that listen to this show, which is totally cool, and you know, I guess that's the way it is. But he wrote me, and he said, "Hey, listen, I am one of the 2% of men that listen to the podcast. My wife of 36 years, and I have 3 older bio kids, 4 adopted, 1 international, 2 FASD, and 1 with low-level autism. Love the podcast. Only wish you had the opportunity to interview more dads. However, thanks for the help and the great reminders to see the beauty in our kids. Jay Durding." And then he put in brackets, "usually listening to the end." Now, those who know what I'm talking about, when he says he's listening to the end, you know what I'm talking about. And those who don't know me, well, you got to listen to the end, all right? So let's get into it. A little bit more about Jay. Here's a little bit more about me. I've been teaching math for 34 years at a small farming school. My wife, myself, and our 3 bio kids spent 3 months. Then we spent a year in Madagascar helping open and then becoming directors of a street center for 200 homeless children. When we came home, I went back to teaching and we started foster caring. For the next 16 years, we fostered around 35 kids and adopted 4. A couple of years ago, I came a trust-based relational intervention practitioner, that's TBRI from Karen Purvis. Sorry, you guys know who I'm talking about. And currently I'm teaching my wife who works at a nonprofit that she started to support foster and adoptive families in our area, and taking one day at a time with the challenges that come with walking in the journey with our kids. This is a great conversation with some really good nuggets of wisdom and insight. So are you guys ready? Because I'm ready. All right, let's go. Hey, everybody, here I am with Jay Durting. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Right, because I butcher names so badly. And I just really appreciate you being on the show today. We're talking with, Dad Jay Durting, foster dad Jay Durting, and apparently international adventurer, which we're going to get to. And as I explained in the opening of the show, you emailed me to say you were in the top 2% of the males who listen, because it is a majority of females listen to this show. First, I want to say welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Jay, why do you think more dads don't listen to the podcast? Should I be offended? And in general, you know, why do you think the number is so lopsided?
And you know, everything I say is my opinion,
and it's, yeah, absolutely.
But I think a lot of dads, when you get into the foster care, you're looking to help get the kids fixed, and you're helping to get them going down the path that everybody thinks they should and get life back to normal for them. And when that doesn't happen, discouragement can set in, and it takes dads longer to start looking for help. And I think it takes them longer to trust.
Okay. That's a great answer. So now let's do the rewind, and let's go all the way back to how you started with this wisdom. So, you know, we always like to do, the origin story, cause obviously you have a lot of experience, and you survived being married for 36 years. That's a whole other podcast, cause man, that's a great feat. How did you get started in fostering?
I was teaching. I'm a math teacher, and I teach at a small farming school. I've been there for 34 years, and that was going along, and an opportunity came up to go to Madagascar and to help open up a street center. And we helped do that for the summer. We flew over there, took our three bio kids, took them over there and did that for a summer. And then a few months later, they asked us to come back and do some more work. And through a series of circumstances, ended up being the director for a year, worked on the street center. We ended up going to another little island called Nosy Bay off of Madagascar and worked trying to change the culture because child prostitution is prevalent there. Mm-hmm. And we came home and we were kind of lost of not knowing what to do next. And we were watching TV one night and an advertisement came on for foster parents, needing foster parents. And our two of our older kids said, "You and mom should do that." And we started down that journey.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. You're going to end up being the most interesting man on the planet watch as we dig in here deeper, because I have about 1,000 questions about Madagascar, but more importantly, you already have come into this with, maternal kids, right? Neurotypical kids. So before you started fostering, who was in the family?
There were my oldest son and mm-hmm. a daughter and a younger son, and they're all 3 years apart. Right now they're 33, 30, and 27, married and giving me grandkids. I have 6 grandkids.
Jeez. So you're the, matriarch, unless you're the first man, because we all know who runs the ship, and that's another topic for another time.
And that's true.
And I don't want to get us in any more trouble than we might already get into, Jay. So you said something was missing. Was there something that working in Madagascar with the kids filled, internally?
We were asked to stay there and to continue working and take over some other projects and do some stuff. And it was hard to figure out what we were supposed to do. And it came down to my wife said, "You need to decide what you want to do, because I'll be happy either place that we go." And I am born to be a teacher. I love teaching. I love everything about it. And I missed it so much that's what I said I need to go back to. And it just felt like there was something else we should be doing. We just, I don't know, helping people is mm-hmm. I think in both of my wife's DNA, and through this process, she now she got it started and works with a nonprofit called Homes of Hope that reaches out to foster families and adoptive families to help with their kids. And it serves 8 counties in our area, about 500 kids, I would say. And it's just part of our DNA, I guess, of who we are.
Now,
what we were created for.
Now, let me ask this then. Because I appreciate you're still saying this after going through the journey. I was wondering if this is what you were saying before you got introduced to FASD, because that could change people's narratives real quick. So when did you first hear of FASD?
We got our foster care license, and the first placement that we got was supposed to be for a weekend, mm-hmm. and it was a little girl that was severely addicted, and we had no skills whatsoever in what we were dealing with. And we went through 8 weeks of withdrawal. We were supposed to have her for the weekend, and then how that goes, then it was, well, can you do 2 weeks? Well, can you do 2 months? Mm-hmm. Well, and we just said, quit saying how long. We'll just walk the journey for how long we're supposed to. And she's adopted now and 19 years old, and she's affected by fetal alcohol. Do you want the rundown of all the kids we have?
I think you said over time there was 35, right?
We had about 35 kids come through our home, and we adopted 4 of those. And
right,
one of those is from Madagascar. One is, the girl I told you about, our first foster kid we had, we ended up adopting. And then we have a boy, Our two daughters are 20 and 19. We have a boy who is 15. And we have a daughter who is 12. And our 19-year-old and our 15-year-old both have fetal alcohol.
So you're in it right now as we speak. Like you are in the journey, in the trenches.
And we may be interrupted. I've told them that they're not supposed to, but we may be interrupted. And yes, we are in the trenches.
Yes, no big deal. That's what the edit button's for. And yeah, because like my dogs could bark. My toddler could come flying in here. She likes to make an appearance as well. So yeah, don't even worry about that. And I wouldn't doubt if they're listening in at the door right now as well. So it's okay. But in terms of FASD, because listen, here's what the narrative that I hear a lot is that, you know, foster parents, they go into foster parent after raising neurotypical kids and doing a heck of a good job, right? And they're giving you grandkids now, and you become a foster parent, no skills, and then you start to see the behaviors that you really didn't see before, and the symptoms from your neurotypical kids. When were you introduced to like FASD, the disability? Was it through seeing with the foster placement what she was going through, or how did that world collide with you?
Things seemed to be going okay. You know, we got through the hard stuff, and hard things would come up every now and then, that she had some medical stuff that we'd had to deal with, and a lot of just withdrawals would come and go, it would seem like. And then when she hit about 4, yeah, we could tell there was something different, and we knew what she came with. So we just started looking into it. And at that point in time, we had a definite advantage because we live 45 minutes from WSU, which Washington State, you know, they have their college, and then Washington is in Seattle. Yep. But they worked together, and they had an FASD clinic, and we were able to get her in and diagnosed.
But when you were researching, the impact of drug exposure? But then when did you read something about FASD and say, oh, there it is, to prompt you to go to the clinic?
Someone in this town did an FASD workshop, and we said, what if this could be it? And so we went, and she gave us the address to go to the clinic, and we went through her workshop, and it was like a checkbox. Yes. Yes.
And so then at least you're going towards some answers. Now, what is your daughter's understanding of it, or was there any at this time?
She understands. We have always been really open with our kids. This is what you have. This is not who you are. And we, you know, this is because she's an incredible kid, just incredible kid. But it definitely has effects on decisions, and the journey's hard to walk. She knows she has it, but she denies it, that right. It has any problems. And that's probably one of my biggest frustration is with both of her kids. I wish there was something at the age they are now that says, here's what you need to do to help yourself. Here's what we need to do to help you. And it's the hardest part of the journey because
you're offering help and you're watching this, you know, the decisions that they're making over and over, and you know what the outcome is, yet they can't see it. And they're still going down that road, and still even supporting that is hard.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, we had 3 kids that we thought we were great parents because, you know, they did great. They were good kids, and we thought we knew what we were doing, and we thought, well, just bring them in. You know, I guess we found out the Beatles were wrong. The song All You Need Is Love is the biggest lie for what we're going through.
That's right. And it's just a part of the recipe. but you need so much more in order to make it work. And that's one of the toughest things people have to get over, is you could just love them better, right? And that's the narrative we're talking about with the dads, about being able to fix. We don't want to talk. We want to know what the issue is and how do we fix it.
And yeah, how do you get that fixed? How do you go through it? I mean, because, you know, the two biggest things we're dealing with is, you know, hearing that, well, as soon as you get them in your home and you can love them through this, mm-hmm. and, oh, it's a good thing you got them when they were young, when they were babies, because then things will be better for you. And it's not.
No, because it's still a struggle every single day. So you're talking about decision making. She has trouble with. What are some? I know you have the 15-year-old boy as well.
Yeah, we have 15-year-old boy, and school is very hard for him. And so, especially now, since some days they're at school and some days they're at home, and it's just that lack of routine for him is really hard.
Yeah, it's a definite loss for sure, right? And while I will give you some encouragement, they might not recognize now because it's hard. If, you know, the brain is the issue, it's hard to have that sort of insight, right? Well, that's why, you know, one of the best words of advice I got was you can't convince some individuals that their thinking is off because their thinking is off. Right? Like thinking is the disability. So they told me, dude, save your energy for interventions, not lectures. Cause you know, you're going to sound like the teacher from the Peanuts if you keep yapping. You mentioned school and everyone's struggling with school, but now I got an actual teacher. Teachers are getting a bad rap sometimes in my group, Jay. I don't know if you see it, you know, parents are frustrated in general. To take me to the other side, what are some of these things these teachers are going through while adjusting to life in the pandemic age?
I would say the hardest thing is, and the thing that I wish people would understand, is we don't have any other information than you do. So our world is being jerked around as fast as yours. And we don't, you know, all of a sudden, okay, we're going to school, we're not going to school. And that trying to maintain relationship is more important than the academics right now.
Okay, so what if a parent, like, and from maybe the experience talking to the other faculty or from what you hear, so if an FASD parent says, this is too much. Like, have you been understanding? Have other teachers been understanding to say, let's take our foot off the academic path? Or what's going on out there?
It depends on what school, what teacher, each individual. Gotcha. But for our school, the school that I teach in is not the school that our kids go to, because I live in Washington State and work in Idaho. And right. That's two different countries right now on how they handle COVID, but it's weird. So for me, it's just communicate with me, let me know, I'll take what they can get and I can push them for a little bit more. Let me be the one to communicate and take that load off of you. You just be with your kid and I'll get what I can get out of them. And it'll be good enough for now.
Yes, sir. Yes. Boom. I can end it right now because that's a mic drop. But it also, would you say it's because you get it? Like you're living it, lived it now. Cause you're on both sides of the fence here.
Yeah. And I got to give a huge shout out to my son's school because we had an IEP meeting with his teachers and the principal at the high school, because this is his first year of high school. And we're saying, we're worried. And this was before, we don't know if school's open, school's closed. And the principal, after us sharing our hearts, the teachers are going, okay, we got you. And the principal said, okay, so our goal for this kid at the end of this year is get him as far as we can academically, but we want him to say, I don't hate school.
Yes, perfect. I was talking to, we were talking to Megan Tucker in my online group the other, even yesterday. She said, you know, she had to come to a teacher and say, you know, my kid doesn't even want to be in the building. So what do we do? So what you're saying is that's an excellent plan, because this is heavy for everyone. Yeah. Nothing's the same. Like we talk about individuals on the spectrum needing a structure and routine. I need it too, right? I don't know about you, Jay, but like I appreciate that, and it's been thrown out of whack for me as well. I'm lucky I get to do what I do from home, but I would have been out on the road at least 150 days this year, and that's different. And so it's heavy for everyone.
That's the thing that we got to understand. It's heavy for everyone. So instead of being, okay, what are you going to do for me? It's how are we going to get through this together? And so if a parent, there's days that that when it first started, that I was home and I'm trying to teach my classes. And I have, you know, I'm a math teacher. I'm teaching seventh grade through calculus. And I'm supposed to be teaching my kids at home and holding everything together. And my wife is trying to help the parents and she's working with. And it was just a zoo. And there were days that I emailed the science teacher and said, our science lesson today was to bake what you had. And we learned about spices and we did some cooking together.
Yeah.
He was like, great. Just give me something.
Yeah, just give me something. Yeah, and it's true, and because you had to hold it all together. Now, how was it frustrating? Because you are a math teacher. We know math is a cardinal deficit for individuals on the spectrum, just because of the way they work. Did you find that in your guys? Did they struggle with math, or did you find another way to teach them? How did that work?
My daughter did really well until it got to her junior year. And then it was just where I more or less took it in the direction of, okay, here's what they want you to learn. Here's what you really need. Here are the five things that you have to do out of these 15 things. You do these five things, you'll make it. And those five things will be useful for you in this way. And
in the real world.
In the real world. And with our son, it's day to day. There's days that he's on and we can do really well. And the next day he's forgotten whatever it was that we had.
Yeah. Memory issues. That, you could see that's sad for him, right? Because it's there and he can learn. It's just remembering it.
Yeah.
Okay. So now that you have the knowledge that you have, because you also took TBRI training, right? That's Karen Purvis. Is that where that was from?
Okay.
Now, what do you do when you're teaching a class and you see someone struggling, and you can say, oh, this individual might be on the spectrum, because they could be one in 20, kids in school are known to be on the spectrum from a study. Well, what do you do?
Okay. Ask me that again. So in my class, when I'm teaching,
so teacher hat, that's okay. Teacher hat. When you see a kid struggling, but they look normal, they talk normal, and you start to say, whoa, whoa, something else might be going on, knowing that math is a cardinal deficit. What do you do? Do you talk to the parents? How do you know? Because you know that they would be way over their head math wise.
Right. Usually for me, I just let my administration know and talk with counselors and say, you know, we got something going on. And it never seems to be a surprise to anyone, because the kids who struggle have been struggling. And then I break it down for them and I find different ways. I mean, I got whiteboards all around my classroom and some of the kids work at the whiteboard and I can watch and help them through everything that they're doing. And some, you know, they work on an iPad and I can see it on my iPad and work through it with them. And it's just whatever it takes. We just have, I'm not your traditional, everybody sit down in your seat, do these 20 problems. It's like, this kid needs to do 5 problems and can go on and do something else because he's got it. I'm fine with that. And this kid needs to do 25 and probably 25 more after that to get it. And this kid, if I can get 4 problems out of him a day that are good, we'll take it.
Was that your teaching philosophy before, or has that evolved with your understanding of intellectual disabilities?
I would say the biggest change in this whole entire thing for me, both as a dad, as a man, as a teacher, has been the changes in me. Because I was that guy of, here's what you're going to do, and here's the bar, and if you don't meet it, then we'll see you again next year. Algebra 1, baby, the hardest 3 years of your life. You know?
Like, literally, like, boom, yes, sir, no, sir.
Yeah. That, and that's, you know, it's when I, not proud of it. I was a good dad, but I was, this is what our family does, and this is what you will do. And I got a great relationship with my bio kids, but mainly my oldest bio daughter. She's the second most stubborn person I know in this world. And we would go at it and I would win. And now I wish I would have been the dad that I am to these kids, to her. And we have a great relationship.
Yeah, I hear that. That's very nice of you to say. Everyone goes through that. It's that, and I famously show in my trainings of a teacher that, you know, had a strong reaction towards me while teaching, because he came to realize that he had been doing things a certain way to kids who didn't have the capacity. See, he guilty, like it was instant guilt, he said. And he was very, you know, it looked very rude to me, but he just said it was like a kick in his gut. So we all, you know, we all get there. So don't feel guilty about that, for sure. That's the way you were raised. And I think that's the way a lot of, you know, the parents have been raised.
Structures, parenting with, do what they, you want them to do.
Parenting with, by power, right? And it especially then, when you try to parent by power, that's Dr. Ross Green, by the way, he says that. When you try to parent by power to an individual on the spectrum, and they tell you where to go, and you're like, what? And it's total, just like, every trick in your book is that you can get angry as you want, and it's still, they're still the same. Then you have to change.
And that was our journey, because what we were doing was not working. You know, I can remember one time a kid just at our dinner table, I said to do something and he told me where to go and how to get there. And the look on all my other kids' face was like, oh no. And by that time I just said, you know, try that with respect. Let's say it this way. Use your words. We'll get there. And we were struggling, though, because all of our tools were gone. And we didn't have...
And then you start to feel like the failure.
Yeah. It's like, we're not cut out for this.
And isn't that interesting? And so that's, we could even bring that back to dads. Once they get to that point, do you think because they can't fix or provide, and you know, they even see their wife getting talked to in a way, you know, with the verbal, and there isn't like a quick, how did you get through that? Say, you know, I wasn't proud of it, but how did you get through that kind of guilt, saying, oh dear, like once you figured this was brain and they weren't doing this on purpose?
I think it was, we were looking for something different, because my connection with my kids is really important to me. That's who I am. And it was obvious, you know, we had already adopted them, so we didn't have the choice of just saying, we're done. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We were looking for something. And one day I came home and my wife said, I found this book. I want you to read it. And it was A Connected Child by Karen Purvis and Dr. Cross. Mm-hmm. And I read it and I said, I think that's the direction we need to go, because we'd gone to about four other parenting classes and went, nope, you know, and I'm not bashing them, but it didn't work.
I hear you. Well, if it's not understanding the brain and neurodiversity, it won't work. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was like, okay, great. Now, how do we do this? And my wife said, well, I already called Texas Christian University, and here's the number of a guy that's going to help us out. And they basically gave us a coach and just said, let's help you through this because you need some help. And we just started that and ended up just getting trained in it. And it just gave me that new perspective of I need to stay connected with the kids. And no matter what garbage comes your way, I mean, I have had to go to places and get kids out of situations. I mean, when you call the police and they answer the phone with, hi Jay, what do you need? You mm-hmm. know your life is weird.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we had a relationship with them because of the nonprofit that my wife started, because we did. But that trust that we have, we've had situations to where, you know, I've had to go down to the police department and they come out and say, we got this, you go home, because here's what we're going to do. And I'm saying, I need to be with my kid. And they're going, we have this. We know it's the FASD talking. We got you. Let us help you. Here's what we do. What do you think of this plan? And it was just a whole new frame of mind of the way that I was thinking and seeing my kids.
You were taking them at, as I love to say, you were taking that at brain value, and then their face value went up when you did that.
Yeah. And you know, it's not walking that journey alone. I mean, that's the other part of dads, I think, is do this alone. It's hard to trust. And I have a group of friends that they've adopted kids. And I have one guy that we don't really do a whole lot together, but all of a sudden I'll either text him or I'll get a text from him that'll say, you know, Tuesday night, 8 o'clock taco time. And you just got to get together and help each other out. That one of you is going through a situation and it's not walking it alone. Our kids, our three oldest kids, help us walk. We have a runner in our house and they were gone and they were in a bad situation. And our three oldest kids, our oldest son called us and said, we know where they're at and it's not a good situation. You and mom back off and you let us get them back home. And it was a process, but they did, all three of them working together.
Which is amazing, because sibling struggles. Now, your kids were a bit older. If you don't mind, I'd love to just touch on that a little bit. Okay, so these kids are now in your home and causing all this ruckus, for lack of a better term, right? All these situations. Were they immediately open to it? Or like you, did they have to go through a process as well? Because I know, Jay, people are going to be listening to this going, oh, I wish I had that.
Yeah. I think in retrospect, I really think they did it because they knew that we wouldn't be able to pay attention to them as much. And no matter what they did, it would look pale in comparison. So, you know, they were home free, but no, but they, two of them were in it. Two of them were just our oldest son and our oldest daughter. It's like, we're in this. They took their share and yeah, they would get frustrated and you'd hear about it just like we did, but they were there. It was, this is what our family does. And our youngest bio son, he more than once said, it's not my thing. This is not my thing. And we respected that. We tried not to have him to have to take care, to be involved in the situations. And
yeah, that's fair.
He had other interests, and as long as he was being safe and being respectful, we'll do the best we can. There are times that it's just, this is who our family is, and you can ignore this when you get out on your own. But now, you know, he was one of the ones that when we had a kid who ran and was in a bad situation, they ended up going and living with him for a little bit. And we gave him a bad time and said, the one who said this isn't for me is the one who has it full time in their house now. And he said, I told you when you adopted him, I was in, and this is who we are. He said, I just couldn't do it at that point in time. And so, yeah, they each have their own journey going through it. And it's just that respect of, there are days you just got to tap out.
Okay, let's talk about that. Explain that.
There are days that life just sucks. And you know what you're supposed to do, but you just don't want to do it. And you got to find the one in the family who is strong. I mean, my wife and I will look at each other and we will actually say, I'm tapping out. Are you in? You know, and mm-hmm. It's bad when you're both ready to tap out.
Yeah.
But I just need that few minutes to go away from this and to find and to become mindful of who I am and relax and breathe. And
how do you do that? What's your routine, man? What is your rejuvenation cup filling routine? What do you do when it gets heavy?
I like to cook. There's times that I'm in my kitchen and I say, nobody come in here.
Gotcha.
Music. I love to put my headphones on and I'll go for a walk and listen to music, listen to your podcast once in a while. You know, that's how I got.
All right.
That's how I got started on it. Somebody's got to talk me down and tell me I can get it through. And there's no one who knows it, but you listen to the podcast and okay, I can do this.
Yeah, you can. Oh, that's beautiful. Thanks for saying that. I appreciate you saying, I'll listen to it sometimes. All right. Keep me humble, Jay. That's fine.
No. But I've listened to every episode.
You're awesome.
I tap out a lot.
Yeah. Hey, okay.
And the other thing that I recently started doing is working out in the gym again.
Nice.
And that helps a ton, my frame of mind. And then
it is true.
Talking with friends who have a similar taco time.
Yeah. So that's going to be the title of the podcast, Taco Time.
I think going back to dads, I think that's one thing that I know there's moms out there that listen to this and go, oh, I wish my husband would do blah, blah, blah. It's a journey. Mm-hmm. My wife is amazing. She puts up with me. I mean, 36 years of going through this, we've had some really hard times, but I am stinking stubborn and she's tenacious and we work through. We get the help that we need when we need it. And it's, you know, we're committed. We're committed to each other. We're committed to the kids.
What would you say to a dad?
I would say to a dad, because a mom wants you to, you know, they're social creatures. And so podcasts and things like that, they gravitate to. And I would say to a dad, take it in chunks. I'm not the guy who's going to listen to every podcast as soon as it comes out and listen. I'm going to take it as I need it. And I'm going to have a friend or two that I really trust, because I'm not going to trust a big group.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to trust that. I mean, this is a huge... I'm more out there than a lot of dads, but a lot of dads, one or two friends is what you need. You got to have that one or two people that you can go to and say, okay, my life is in a hellhole right now, and I don't know which direction to go to get out. And know that it's ebb and flow. It's going to be that way. Right now, I'm struggling with some decisions that one of my kids is making. And it's like, oh my gosh. I can't believe this is my life. Mm-hmm. But yet, I got another dad whose son is homeless right now, and we know where he's at. And he and I just sat there and talked and said, okay, got it out? Yeah. But here's the four things that someone who is a caretaker needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing really well with three out of the four.
What's the fourth one you're missing?
Grief. I'm not sure I know how to do that because I still want to fix it. And I still don't want to look at it as I can't do something about it.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that. And yes, you can do something about it. It's just going to look different.
Yeah.
You know, doing something about it, that's what we have to define. What does that mean?
About it is my kids making, and you know, you want to respect their stories. Yeah. But she's going to be living on the other side of the United States. And I don't know what I'm going to do. But I do know that she knows we love her. Because she said, I know that. My family is there for me. I'll be okay. So it's that connection that no matter what goes on, foster kids ask two questions over and over and over again. And the first one is, do you love me?
Mm-hmm.
The answer to that one, foster and adopt. And it doesn't matter how long they've been adopted. Do you love me? And the answer to that question that I've learned through the TBRI and I've learned through walking the journey is the answer to that question has always got to be yes. And the second question that they're going to ask you all the time is, do I get my own way? And the answer to that question always has to be sometimes. And that's
very well said.
Part of the journey.
Very well said. Hey, listen, I got to end it there because it was badass. But I do want to ask one more question, or I want you to tell me, because you talked about how your kids are awesome. Can you tell me how each of your kids are awesome? Like, what are their strengths?
All seven or the four adopted?
The ones on the spectrum. Give me the ones on the spectrum. You know, FASD podcast, we'll narrow it down because we'd be here all day with your dozens and dozens of children.
The amazing thing my daughter has is the ability to work with animals. She has won the Washington State Agility State Fair Championship.
Watch out now.
Washington, with a dog that somebody said, I think she needs this dog. And she told us one day, I'm going to train it. And we said, do you know how? And she goes, I'll figure it out. And she won the agility championship for Washington State. She got interested in horseback riding. And she ended up, we found some people. They found us, actually, and said, let us help her out with the riding. And she ended up qualifying for and went to a national Northwest competition in Las Vegas and ended up placing 15th in the Northwest.
That's excellent.
She's just amazing with animals. And my son just loves to create. He draws, he cooks. You put him in the kitchen and he has no recipe and he just starts throwing food together and you just go, oh, what's this going to be? And 90% of the time, it's really good. He loves to create music. He can hear rhythms. Never had a drum lesson in his life. I wish he has, but he can't stick with it. And I wish he would, because when he drums, people who know what they're doing say he's gotten so much going for him. He just hears and sees music in an amazing way.
That's so nice. That is so nice. I'm glad you reached out. I'm glad we got a chance to talk. What an excellent mix of hope, but realism and sharing your struggles. Cause I have no doubt as, you have listened, you have listened to me on your walk when you weren't having a good time. People are listening to this exact same thing. It's kind of meta a little bit, Jay. So my question to you is, what would be your final thoughts? If people are walking, people are listening, and they're having a tough time, what would you say to those folks listening right now?
Statistics shows, there's a math phrase for you. Statistics shows that the TBRI stuff that we do, that if you get it right 30% of the time, you'll make a significant difference in that kid's life. So forgive yourself. Ease up on yourself. You can get it wrong 7 times out of 10. You're just looking for 30%. Never passed a class in your life with 30%, but you can pass this one with it.
So good. That's a 300 batting average, buddy. That's a trip to Cooperstown if you have a lifetime average like that.
Yeah, and we're looking, as parents, I think so many of us feel like you got to get it 100 or 110% and forgive yourself. And just remember, you have a 10-second kid in a 1-second world. Give them time.
Well done. Jay, thanks, buddy. Would you come back and do this again?
Sure.
Yeah, it was awesome.
We can talk. I got stories, you know. I can always.
Yeah, I have no doubt. Next time we'll have to bring on your wife for sure. We'll do a double podcast date. Again, thank you so much, man. Keep up the hard work. I wish we can clone you a million times and just for being a part of listening to the podcast.
The world can only handle one of me.
That's it. Okay, cool. On that, I'll let it go. Thanks again for joining me, man.
Thank you.
Oh my goodness, what a cool dude. I was soothed just by listening to him. You can tell he's a teacher. He's got a great presence, a great voice. Jay, thank you so much. I just wanted to cover a few things, a couple of the aha moments, a little bit of words of wisdom that I experienced while listening to this, and you could see if it matched up with what you learned. But I liked what he talked about getting into foster parenting as a father. And getting into it because you want to fix kids, right? He said there's a certain level of expectation as a foster parent that dads feel that it's their job to turn these kids around and put them on the right path. And then when that does not happen, you know, dads could get discouraged. And then maybe it looks like a disinterest, but it's actual discouragement, right? And, you know, this is a lifelong disability. So we just have to change, you know, what we think about what does fixing mean? What is success? That's all. It just depends on the lens you look at it. I think he made a great point when he talked about how dads take longer to look for help and they take longer to trust. Is that true for you? If you're a dad listening to this, is this true for your husband possibly? He said, I like what he talked about. He was doing this great thing in Madagascar, an excellent thing, awesome service, but he said something was missing, and what was missing was teaching, and that's what he loved. And so he left Madagascar to go back to what he loved. And why is that such a big point with me? It's a big point because, you know, that's where his interests lie. You know, that's why when we're part of planning for interventions for individuals on the spectrum must be linked to their interests or they won't be interested. It's looking at the strengths, and that's what he loved, even though he was doing such great work. And so think about that when you're developing, you know, interventions for your kids. What really is their passion? And if you start there, you'll do a really good job. He also talked about when he started fostering, he had no skills. He fostered neurotypical kids, which is usually what happens. And this is just one of the areas that the system fails parents, that the system fails individuals on the spectrum, is because with no training and just dropping people off there because they are willing, it's almost like taking advantage of people with big hearts, right, who want to help. And, you know, agencies need to place kids. And, you know, part of it is because, you know, the workers have no idea. They don't understand fetal alcohol. They don't know about it. But this is why if we didn't, we could have probably burnt Jay and his family out if they weren't so resilient, if they weren't so passionate about doing this, because they didn't have training. And that's what he said. We didn't have the skills. And that's why it's important to get skills. And he loved just helping people. And I like what he said to the worker: quit saying how long. And we'll just walk this journey as long as we're supposed to. And even a guy doing well and having this insight and understanding, still his biggest frustration is wanting, you know, his kids on the spectrum to gain this insight into their disability. Well, thinking is the disability. And more often than not, they can't see that anything is wrong with their brain because it's their brain and it's the one they've got and it's the one they're used to and it's the one they used. This is one of the biggest questions that I get is, how do I get my kid to understand the disability? Well, that comes with time. There's also grief and loss there with your children on the spectrum and not maybe having the insight to come to terms with the ability, even the understanding that they have a disability, and just the grief, the denial part about being different, because nobody wants to be different. And he said, like, when we raised our neurotypical kids, we thought we were great parents. I've heard this on more than one occasion. You think you're an awesome kid, parent, and then, you know, you acquire an individual with fetal alcohol, and it's totally different. And then that confidence is shot. It was very poignant what he said about, you know, the biggest Beatles song was a lie, and that all you need is love. Love is part of the equation, but you need a lot more than love. You need training, education, grief and loss work, coaching/support. That's what you need. Love is just one ingredient, and it can't be the only ingredient. Love will not rewire a brain. Love will not fix an organic brain issue, a lifelong, you know, disability. But we can help with the symptoms, and we can put them in an environment where their brain can grow in a positive way. And you talked about what's happening with COVID, and it's true with a lot of our kids. There is no structure. There is no socializing. All those anchors are ripped out. And so when that happens, people go back to, you know, really primal coping mechanisms. And so if you're seeing aggression in your kids, that would definitely be a part of it. And there's grief there. There's grief and loss there with your kids, with having to miss out on other things and not even understand why, because the virus is invisible, right? He talks about the loss of routine and structure, and I asked him, because he's a teacher as well, that was a great perspective. He said, listen, our world is being jerked around just like yours is with teachers. Things are changing, new policies almost every day. We have I work with a caregiver who said it's a nightmare where she lives and where she's working. Nobody knows anything. Kids are getting COVID. And so just think about that. The teachers are dealing with it as well. And he said one of the most important things, he said, trying to maintain relationships is more important than academics right now. And I could not agree with him more. This is about mental health. This is about relationships. So you still have both intact when we get through this pandemic. And what was the teacher that said to him? Give me what you can. It's good enough for now. Good enough for now. And incorporating life skills, and even telling the teacher that, listen, we did some cooking, we did some measuring, we did that. That is absolutely helpful. That is a life skill. That is learning. You know, even with teaching math, and his own daughter on the spectrum who struggles with math, here's what you need to learn, and this is what you're going to need in actual life. School is but a blip on the radar for, you know, in terms of developmental trajectory. What do they need? We're trying to turn these lovely people into lovely adults and that have healthy outcomes, like that have healthy situations when they get through all of this. I really liked it. You know, he said the biggest impact in this whole experience was how he changed. Your kids won't change. And well, I talked to my parents that are taking the coaching program, and they're starting to realize that this is way more about them than their kids. Way more. And he said there's days that you just got to tap out. You got to tap out. You know what you're supposed to do, but you just can't do it. And it's your kids feel the same way. Oftentimes they probably know what they need to do and what they want to do, but they just can't do it. So maybe you guys both need to have a couple days where you tap out and you chill out. and connecting with others, right? They call it taco time. I like that little code word for dads on the DL and the texting. And it sounds like he uses those resources with friendships with other dads who get it and connect. And that's awesome. Like he's what he's doing. He says what's working for him is listening to the podcast, that a boy, going to the gym and talking to the friends. And near the end, he said, you know, there's four things. And those are the four things I talk about: training, respite, grief and loss, and coaching slash support. That's from the FASD community of practice. That's some work Dr. Dorothy Badry did and Donna DeBolt. And it's like, it is the method. It is the model that I use when I'm ever teaching or even just in living and in the trenches with individuals on the spectrum. And they said the one he didn't have was grief. And that is the hardest but the most freeing thing to dive into. It just releases you from what you thought this was going to be look like to take on what it really is. And, you know, so if you need to see someone to talk about grief, because there could be reactions from your kid that are grief related, and there could be actions and reactions from you that are grief related as well. So, you know, listen. If you're listening to all this, if you're here right now, I just want to tell you how badass you are. I just want to tell you how hard you're working and how much I could tell. I could tell that you're just by listening to all this, just by being here today, you're going to be a better parent. And hopefully you picked up some of these wisdoms and these nuggets of gold that Jay provided. And I hope we start to create a battle plan for what's going to happen for, you know, those who celebrate Christmas or, you know, Hanukkah or, you know, whatever whatever you celebrate at this time of year. Let's get prepared. You know, if we need to grieve and recognize that there's going to be losses, but this is to keep everybody safe. This is so we can have 50 more Christmases together and do all those good things. It is hard, but you are surviving. You are surviving. You are actually doing it. It doesn't matter what it looks like around you, but you are actually going through it. And I just sometimes we don't recognize that. And we need to really stop and take a look and say, yeah, man, there are some good things happening and some shitty things happening, but I'm going to latch on to the good things and we're going to wade through the shitty things and we're going to get out the other end. A la Shawshank Redemption, Andy Dufresne, going through that shit pipe. Sorry about all the cussing. But if you haven't watched the movie, you got to watch it. But if you're listening to this, you know, sometimes swear words. I can't help it. I'm just being myself, and I'll always be true, and I'll keep showing up if you keep showing up. So listen, if this is your first time listening to the end, I want you to let me know. Write me, jeff@fasdforever.com. Just say I listened to the end, and now you're in the club, buddy. You're in the club of grinders. You're in the club of warrior parents. You're in the club of those who will make things happen, because you are making things happen. If this is at the end of your walk, good for you. You just burned some freaking calories. I love it. Use all those endorphins for good. And I hope you have an absolute amazing week. Come back here next week because I got more for you, man. I'm not going anywhere. I signed an internal 20-year deal to be here with you to do this. So I love your face. I love you. And just meet me back here next week. We got some excellent, excellent guests coming your way. So we're going to learn and we're going to turn the page and we're going to beat this sucker. You're the best. And I'll see you next week. Bye.